can ask if my dad's had any other kids.
If you wouldn't mind.
Obviously, his time in national service was lively, at least according to him. So who knows?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Got lots of really, really lovely pictures, and Jane likes nothing more than the challenge on the radio of describing photographs. Paint the scene, paint the scene.
Oh, I know, I'm no good at this. That's why you asked me to do it. This is the trug, isn't it?
It is, yep. So the picture of the trug comes from Nicola, and she sent us a picture of this because she usually listens to us whilst gardening or on a dog walk, and she's often to be found using her grandma's trug. That's the thing that she's inherited. It looks lovely, actually, and the scene is just beautiful. So off you go.
Well, it's a bucolic idyll. Does that work?
Yes.
Did I say it right? I just doubted myself when I said it.
Yeah.
Bucolic idyll. It looks like a lovely lawn. I'm guessing the lawn, and I hope I'm not offending you, Nicola, belonging to a quite substantial home. I'm getting home counties vibes, and home counties is not a phrase I enjoy, but I do think it might be somewhere in the home counties. You've got lovely grass. You've got an exquisite wheelbarrow that appears to have some kind of netting in it, and the trug contains, is that twine?
I think it's a not insubstantial amount of twine.
And a hefty pair of gardening gloves?
Some gardening gloves and I think some shears and, you're right, some wire. So I think that there might be some, what do you call it when you spread out the branches of a tree against a fence? What is that term?
Oh,
pleaching.
That's not topiary, is it?
Pleaching.
No.
I think some pleaching might have gone on. Yeah.
Okay, I've never heard of that. What I did do over the weekend was what you might loosely call some gardening. And it was so satisfying. I just tidied up the garden, filled some gardening sacks with rubbish. Do you ever do that? Just trim everything?
I do, yeah.
Weed and trim.
Well, do you know what? I'm not going to pretend, actually, because I know that some of the very lovely people who live in our neighbourhood are well aware of the fact that I employ two lady gardeners.
Oh, I see. Right.
And do the garden every couple of months. And they are called two birds.
Are they? Yeah. That's brilliant. And are they good?
Oh, they're fantastic. Yeah. Sarah and Andrea. And so they trim everything and cut everything. I think because my sister's a proper gardener, like proper gardener, and she makes really beautiful gardens and knows all about planting and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know whether you have this with your sister, but because she's so
much with her.
Good at gardening, I can't do it. You know, it's like that weird kind of, you know, when you put two magnets against each other and they repel. I just can't do gardening.
So you deliberately can't do gardening?
Yeah, because it's my sister's thing.
No, I get that. I do get that. I think, yeah, that the sister sibling, I do think, I obviously don't have a brother, and so I have no idea.
That you know of.
That's a very, very good point. I'm going to Liverpool on Friday. I can always
surprise,
ask.
Surprise!
Yeah. When Cilla Black said that, nobody recognised that as a Liverpool accent.
Did they not?
No. Cilla had lived in Buckinghamshire for quite some time. and when she said, surprise, surprise, it wasn't really something that resonated with the people of Merseyside. But I will ask if my dad's had any other kids.
If he wouldn't mind.
Obviously, his time in national service was lively, at least according to him. So who knows?
Oh, my word. Did he travel abroad?
No, he went to Nottinghamshire.
Okay. For a moment, though, I thought maybe continental Europe might prove to be a fertile ground.
I don't think he'd been abroad until long after he got married.
Okay.
My mother was the adventurous one.
Okay, how far had she got?
Well, she, in fairness, she'd been, I think she'd been to Austria.
Wow.
Oh, listen, no one, the Garveys,
no, I don't want to laugh.
Intrepid is not an adjective you'd attach to them.
No, no, but you do have, you've got family all across the globe now.
I've got cousins hither and thither, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's good. But would you agree that on the whole, when one sibling does something very well, the other one just can't get involved at all? I think it's a healthier way to be than brothers and sisters who all do the same thing.
I agree. And you do get families where everyone is a lawyer.
Or actors.
Or actors. Yeah, that's even odder, isn't
it? I think that's very odd because there's so much... That's a very febrile measure of success and failure in acting, isn't it? You know, if you get your big break or who's got a bigger film or who's had more lead parts, it seems to be a much more open kind of competition. Mm. So I'm always amazed that there are kind of dynasties of actors. You always think, gosh, who's kind of... bending to the younger generation in that family, and maybe people aren't.
Well, there must be families where everyone's an actor except for the person who's sensibly become a dental hygienist.
And is happier.
And is much happier.
Much happier.
Yeah, and doing much more important stuff.
Yeah. This one comes from Lisa, who says, in today's episode, you wondered if the wildlife goes crazy with the eclipse. Now, I love this. We were fortunately in the path of totality on our farm here in northwest Vermont.
Oh, how
picture
wonderful.
Picture the scene. Yeah. We enjoyed the eclipse together with our donkeys in the back of the barn. We enjoyed birdsong and woodpeckers pecking away as we drank our sparkling wine and ate our little picnic and fought off the donkeys who were keen to try what we had. I'd chided my husband for bringing bug spray with us, and as the totality neared and it started to be dusk, the bugs came out and we needed the spray. At the same time, the peepers, little frogs that make a huge amount of noise, started their dusk chorus. During the 3 minutes of total eclipse, the frogs and all the birds fell silent. The donkeys continued to graze.
I was just doing a period of really impressive silence there.
The donkeys continued to graze unperturbed. The birds started up again. So we conclude that everyone thought briefly it was nightfall and then realised it was a false alarm and went back to their regular lives. Lisa ends by telling us that one of my donkeys ate our paper napkins, but otherwise nobody acted strangely. I'm charmed that y'all were interested in our celestial event. I listen to y'all every day. I'm just having to say it like that, Lisa, because I think if I tried to go at it as normal, it would just sound odd. But I love the y'all. I'm charmed that you... Can you say it better?
I can't. And I just think I'd sound such a fool.
Okay. Anyway, it's kind of you to bother to elucidate us.
Which part of Vermont was that from?
That was from northwest Vermont.
Well, I'd love to know more just about... Because you're right. I'm drawn to the idea of Vermont. Is it mountainous? It's quite rural, isn't it?
Very.
And it's quite a sophisticated part of America. Am I right? I don't know. I'm plucking it.
I don't know how I really know Vermont.
Chest hairs there. I don't know.
What comes out of Vermont that you and I would have recognised?
Well, this is why we need more information from our correspondent.
I think it's sometimes where Jack Reacher ends up in a Lee Child's book.
Holed up in a motel.
Yep, the plotline has taken him to a small town laid out on a simple grid system somewhere in northwest Vermont.
I did love that one Lee Child book I read, The Secret. Because he was on the programme, wasn't he?
He was. Others are available.
Oh, and about 17,000 others are available. Yeah. And I hope people enjoyed Anthony Horowitz yesterday. I went back and listened to that, weirdly. I don't often do that. Sometimes I like to listen to myself. Just one of those weird things. And he could talk, couldn't he? Good grief. He was one of those men. He was basically like a... He was like Casey Jones, steaming and a rolling, intellectually and semantically. The man just didn't stop.
He didn't, no. I rather felt that he, in the moment, felt better for having displayed all of his political angst out on the table and then immediately regretted it. But that's the joy of live radio.
It is.
Is it all comes out. But I felt it was stuff that he needed to say, actually. And if you haven't heard the interview, his son now works at Downing Street and is the communications kind of honcho, head honcho for Rishi Sunak. So there is a bit of divided loyalty there, isn't there? Because Anthony Horowitz is pissed off with the current Conservative government, but also pissed off with the cynicism being aimed at the current Conservative government.
So he's also very proud of his son, as you would be. And I think it is interesting when, I've certainly, for good reasons, had lectures from my offspring about my political views and how I'm just simply wrong about various things. It is quite a moment in your life when your children just take you on and just say, no, you've just got that wrong.
Well, Mulcairn's The Locum Jane and I were talking about exactly that on the last couple of episodes of the podcast. And it started out as a conversation about friendships that span the political divide, which I think we both felt we were less likely to have friendships across the political divide now than perhaps in previous generations. But then we did reference exactly that when your children or other people's children turn out to hold really staunch different political beliefs, the kind of problems that might cause in the family.
Well, that is the subject of a new novel by John O'Farrell.
It is, isn't it?
We haven't had him on, have we?
No, but he's booked. He is booked.
He's coming on, because his son turns up, I think it's his son, turns up at home and says, "Mum and Dad, I've got something to tell you." And they think it's one thing, but it turns out to be that he's a Conservative.
Which in John O'Farrell's case, because he was a staunch Labour supporter way back in the days of Tony Blair.
But by the way, we take all political comers here. Well, not everybody, but almost all. So if you're thinking of voting, well, just vote, actually. That's the most important thing, isn't it, Fee?
Yes, it is.
We're talking about PR on the radio show today, which is interesting because I was only thinking earlier, I've never lived in a constituency with jeopardy.
No, me neither.
And I do think it makes a difference. I would love to be in one of the constituencies that will change hands and will cause a flurry of excitement whenever the election comes round. But I never, ever have.
So this is a proportional representation, in case... outside of the UK.
We're talking about public relations.
Yeah, and actually maybe, because so many other countries have proportional representation, you've got no need to really know what the term means anymore. But it's just never going to happen in this country, is it? Because whichever party it is that gets in has got in because PR doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So unless the Liberal Democrats got in... They're the ones who always lose out,
and they won't get in because we
don't have it. So that's the pickle, isn't it? That is the pickle.
Yeah. I want to say hello to Debbie because she was the person who sent us the delicious chocolate. I was so excited I couldn't say it, from France. We just couldn't read your writing. It is terrible, Debbie. I mean, your writing's absolutely terrible, but she knows it. My handwriting lets me down all the time. It's not the first time I've been identified as Robbie, she says. One colleague used to call me Rob all the time. And I also had another embarrassing moment when I sent a gift of champagne with an accompanying note to a client whose husband wanted to know who Rob was. I'd signed it as Deb, or so I thought.
That could thicken a plot, couldn't it?
That is, that just shows the dangers of shoddy handwriting. But we don't care, and the chocolate was just lovely and much appreciated. So thank you very much, Deb or Debbie.
Jan contacts us to say my family member, Tom Dudley, was the first person to die of bubonic plague in Sydney in 1900.
Yeah, that was my favourite email of the day, really.
Well, it doesn't end there.
It gets much worse. Yeah.
So just ponder on that. Ponder on Tom Dudley's bubos for a second. And then here comes the second bit. That was after having survived a prosecution for cannibalism in the UK. Now, you cannot leave it, Joan, at that. I'm sorry, because we just need to know more. We would like to see pictures. There might be photographs.
I don't want to see those pictures, Fee. What you do in your own time is up to you.
And we would just definitely like more of the story of Tom Dudley.
That suggests that the bubonic plague didn't get to Australia until 1900. Would that be right?
I don't know. I mean, yes, obviously it wasn't in Australia.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, no, it does suggest that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I was just trying to think maybe they could have had the bubonic plague back in the 14th century and it had come back round again. But no, the first person to die in Sydney in 1900. Now, you could interpret that a different way. Because he could be the first person to die of bubonic plague in Sydney in 1900. So just in that year.
Oh, I see. Yes, got you.
Or just in Sydney. So we definitely need more, please.
We definitely do, Jan. Yeah. And we'd also love other stories of people who've got absolutely disgusting long-deceased relatives. Because that does sound a good story. Yeah.
Who then went off to Australia. That's the inference, isn't it? Having survived prosecution for cannibalism in the UK. Mm. So he was prosecuted and then sent out as a... when Australia was viewed as a penal colony.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but that just begs more questions.
It does, doesn't it?
So please fill us in. Jane and Fee at times.radio is the place.
Wouldn't it be great if all of those programmes, very, very serious programmes, Jane, that you and I have presented on Radio 4, if they had the same kind of stumbling, bumbling confusion of fact aired on a daily basis?
You obviously didn't hear many of my editions of Woman's Hour, because I can assure you.
So, somewhere someone just goes, I'm really not sure. What does that mean? I don't really know. Does anyone know? And then the sound of paper shuffling.
that is Radio 4. Anyway, Tamsin is in Thailand, and you are very lucky, Tamsin. She's got idea for merchandise for off-air. Reading glasses that are tinted for reading the latest book club book when outside on a sunny day in the usual strengths you can buy at the shops, i.e. +1, +1.5, +2, etc. Put your logo along the frame at the side.
It's a good idea.
It's not a bad idea at all, is it? But, of course, I did have those glasses that changed. Do you remember my Specsavers glasses that changed when the sun came out? And I was so mocked, not least by Fiona here. She said I looked like Mike Reed from EastEnders. Back in the day. I did. But they were so useful. Anyway, I keep them. I've got them. They're still at home. And I haven't been deterred.
Well,
I will wear them again.
The funniest time, Jane, was when we were doing the outside broadcast for the coronation of the king.
That was so funny.
And it was a very, very dreary day.
It was terrible.
It wasn't really sunshiny at all. And obviously we had to have lots of publicity pictures taken of us in situ, just about to do exciting reporting on the monarch. And it was me and my normal glasses and my Mac, because it was absolutely teeming down with rain. And honestly, you look like you were an escaped convict. Just
I know.
Well, flying in incognito.
I do need to work on my special glasses, I think. Anyway, I'm not wearing them today.
No. Livia loves the show. We love you, Livia. I listen with such delight to the anonymous listener who wrote in about the butts of living in Sweden. I was even banging the desk in agreement. Married to a Swede for over 20 years, now divorced, I got utterly fed up with the Swedes' unrelenting, unapologetic smugness about their country and their way of doing things.
They sound terrible.
A few years in, my ex wanted us to move to Sweden and I said no thank you, as I knew I'd feel smothered pretty fast. Individual Swedes are very friendly and welcoming, but I agree with your correspondent, and the way that she put it was spot on. My ex even wanted to take one of our children to Sweden with him after the divorce to give him a better life. Not the other child, though, go figure. Anyway, when I hear an advert with an exaggerated Swedish accent, it makes my blood curdle. On another topic, I was in the city last week and I wondered why there were so many Robert Dyerses around. I thought maybe a junior would be sent out for a desk fan or new kettle, but as you say, it seems odd to order a garden bench or bird feeder in your lunch hour. And that's my point, Livia. I just, you know...
No, that was a good point well made.
It's the massive full-size barbecue for sale in the Robert Dias on Fleet Street that quite often I go past on the bus. I just think, oh, it's going to be a bit difficult to get that home.
What Sweden has brought to us, though, not just ABBA, is IKEA, I call it. And that is a shop that, for me, I've just got to be honest, I have a special love affair with. I just love it. And my most recent purchase was a dish that I'm using for my lemons. And it cost, I think it was £4.50 or something. It brings me such pleasure. It sounds laughable. And it's the most middle-aged, ludicrous thing to say.
But no, I don't think it's ludicrous at all.
And I think it's a good shop.
Yes, I think it's a brilliant shop. And it is really nudged our old-fashioned love affair with dark furniture and gloomy curtains. Do you remember the Chuck Out the Chintz advert they had?
I do, yeah.
Which was just brilliant because it was absolutely get rid of the tassels, the pom-poms, the frills, the very strange kind of shag pile carpet things in the bathroom and just do it our way. And it's transformed our way of decorating our houses.
Those 1970s little things that used to cling to the toilet bowl.
Yeah.
I mean,
so strange.
If they could talk, what would they say?
Well, they would say bubonic plague.
Wash me.
Yeah, we see you and we do one better. Just a bit of a comment, though, Livia, about that marriage across, it's not continents, is it, but across nationalities.
Cultures.
I think I'd love to hear other people's experiences of that, because I think it's something that at the beginning may be completely exciting and bedazzling and wonderful, and through no kind of fault of you or the marriage or the person or anything else, there just seem to be so many people who much further down the line really, really struggle with the feeling that they're not home, you know, when, and it is the elephants returning to the valley thing, isn't it? And I know that I have a friend who is constantly surprised that their children are of a different nationality to them. It's never just become a given or an accepted thing. So I would love to hear more thoughts about that.
I'm thinking along the same lines. I'm always genuinely impressed by people who move countries. I just think people take it so lightly. And the idea that you can travel across the world and establish a life or a relationship with someone from a completely different place with a whole different backstory and different sets of experiences, and you just make a new life for yourself thousands of miles from home. Whether you're coming to this country or whether you're from this country and you go somewhere else, I am in awe of it because I just think it takes such strength. Yeah. And I think we underplay it such a lot. And I'm not surprised that as people age, their longing for home kind of re-establishes itself.
But I think it's something that you don't talk about very much, because also there are so many other reasons why people's relationships change or may have broken down or, you know, whatever it is. The simple fact that you don't feel that you're home enough maybe doesn't get quite such a big play. Mm. So any stories on that? Or, you know, if you'd like to completely disagree and your story is a very happy one and you've just been really glad to leave this small, myopic, often rain-filled nation behind and you've never looked back, we'd certainly be interested in those stories too.
I know the email referred to Swedes being smug. I don't think people in Britain are smug about Britain on the whole. Or have I just not met enough smug British people? Because I think we laugh at Britain, we do it affectionately and we send it up, but I don't think we celebrate it as though it is truly a wonderful, fabulous place without blemish.
But could
I think
you,
we laugh at it.
Could you say
with
that
affection?
Smug is just the other side of the pompous coin, in which case I think that does fit the bill. I mean, if you think of the classic kind of narcissistic Brit who travelled abroad during the Empire, who pitched up in different countries.
That's a whole different story.
Saying our way of doing things.
I think you mean spreading civilisation fee. That's what we did.
Civilisation and
apparently
democracy and administration. I think that's a bit of smug, isn't it?
I don't know. I've never felt smugger than this morning. I bought a jar of capers before 9 o'clock.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
That'd make me feel a bit queer.
Well, I'm just re-establishing my middle-class credentials. I was there, I took the capers home, and then I thought, God, you're such a brat. Yeah. Before 9 o'clock, and a jar of capers in the cupboard.
I'm not going to judge you, because we've got double exams in our house at the moment, and there's a lot of stress and work going down. I did find myself making breakfast in bed for one of our exam-ridden inhabitants, which was cheese on toast with kimchi and an oat flat white.
Okay. You're worse than me. But can I just say to anybody planning a family, do think about the age gap, because you want to avoid what Fee's going through, which is the A-levels and GCSEs in the same summer.
No, I'm...
Do you think it's easier?
Yes, I'm actually quite grateful for it, because we're all on the same rat wheel. We're just we're all going round and round at the same time.
I suppose you'd only have it to cut, yeah.
You had a three-year...
A three-year gap.
Gap.
Yeah.
So you had one clear summer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe that helped me. I'm just thinking of myself as usual. But maybe you're better off just swallowing the medicine. Yeah,
but it's like everything, isn't it? I will never know any difference. So
you won't, love.
Nope. Well, I mean, I hope I don't. No.
I don't think I'm still ovulating, Jane. No, not that again. God.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's our guest?
Adele Roberts is our guest. She is an award-winning BBC broadcaster, TV personality and DJ. You might know her from lots of the different shows that she did on Radio 1 Extra. She has got a fantastic anecdote about one particular listener to her show, her early morning breakfast show on Radio 1 Extra, towards the end of this interview. Jane and I have met her before and really enjoyed her company. She's a real sparkling kind of person, isn't she? She's very upbeat, very positive.
Well, she went to the same school as me.
Well, so she's bound to be. Absolutely. a pedigree.
Indeed. She is, and I think I'm so glad that she is talking as loudly and as proudly as she is about what's happened to her, because I really do think it's going to make a difference.
I agree. So what's happened to her is just really quite shocking. She got bowel cancer diagnosed at stage 2, but very close to stage 3.
And she was so young.
So young. And she will tell her story, obviously, better than Jane and I could ever do. But the important thing for you to know is that the book that she has written, which is called Personal Best, From Rock Bottom to the Top of the World, is about a very, very quick journey from having serious surgery for cancer, being told that she would have a stoma for possibly for the rest of her life, and then to go on to decide to run the London Marathon and to complete the London Marathon. This is all within the space of about 3 years. So that's what the book is about. We went right back to the beginning of her cancer story, though, for this interview, and she started by telling me what her initial symptoms have been.
Yeah, thank you for asking that, because I think I didn't know for a long time there was something wrong. There was something wrong with me in plain sight as well for a lot of the years before my diagnosis, and I just didn't realise. The thing with bowel cancer is it's quite a sneaky form of cancer, and a lot of the symptoms, you can explain them away. So I started to lose weight, but I was running a lot and I felt like I was in the shape of my life, so I just thought it was a symptom of getting fitter. I had a bit of a swollen tummy when I'd eat, but I thought that was just me being a bad cook. And then the thing that made me ring the doctors was I started to notice, first of all, mucus when I go to the toilet, and then I started to notice spots of blood, and then the spots of blood didn't go away. And at first, I didn't want to be a burden to the GP, and I thought, don't ring up, because COVID was happening, and I just didn't want to bother them. I knew they had a lot going on. And then it became so regular that I thought, stop being silly, ring up and speak to somebody. And that was the main thing.
And presumably, you also think, I'm a young woman and I am fit and I am still functioning. So your brain wants to tell you that everything's okay. That's a very natural thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that I was very naive as well. And it seemed to me that cancer was something that would happen to other people. You don't realise it can happen to you, especially, like you say, when you feel like you're fit and maybe you're younger than people definitely that get affected by bowel cancer. And even my GP said when she examined me, I don't think it's cancer, but I'm going to give you the test just in case.
And it's such a simple test, isn't it? If somebody tells you to do the test or you're sent the test, don't be put off by the test. You need to have a poo, take a little bit of it. It could save your life, couldn't it?
Absolutely. And you can do it in the privacy of your own home as well. And if you think about it, we all go to the toilet every single day. So it's always a chance to just spot those symptoms. And like you say, don't fear the symptoms, fear not telling somebody. Unfortunately, bowel cancer is the second biggest cancer killer in the UK, and that's because people don't get diagnosed early enough because they worry about the symptoms or they feel embarrassed.
So when you were diagnosed, I was really interested in your reaction, Adele, because you're in the room. I think you had two nurses there with you and Mr. Barn, who was your consultant. Your first reaction was to say to him, "Is it my fault?"
Yeah. I was so shocked when I first heard the words, "You've got cancer," because I wasn't expecting him to say that. My first question was, "Am I going to die?" And then the second one, "Is it my fault?" I just felt this overwhelming shame. I thought it must be something I've done to myself. I don't know why I thought that, but again, I think that's maybe why deep down I didn't ring anybody, because I thought I'd been doing something wrong.
What would that wrong be?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think just not looking after myself. I think I mentioned in the book about going through grief, and it took me a long time to get out of that grief. And part of the process of grieving was not doing self-care, not caring about myself. I think I was punishing myself. And so I thought that I'd been abusing my body, or I'd not been eating the right things, or I'd been foolish and I'd not been looking out for the symptoms.
So you got your treatment very quickly. And do you know what? We should just take a moment to say all hail the NHS, shouldn't
we?
I'm sure that you want to do that.
Yeah, definitely. They were fabulous. The moment that they knew it was cancer and that it was stage two, very nearly stage three, but stage two, they were like, right, let's get you into hospital and let's sort it out.
How much did you know about what would then happen to your body?
Not much, to be honest. I tried to have no spoilers because I was going through so much. Once I'd been told I had cancer, I just thought, right, compartmentalise and just get through each day. So I tried not to worry myself and scare myself. I just thought, you're in this now. What's going to happen is going to happen. The NHS are going to help you as much as they can. So just deal day by day. So I just wanted the operation as soon as possible to take the tumour out. And I thought, if I need chemo after that, I'll deal with it. If I get told I need chemo, and if I need a stoma to help me recover from the surgery, I'll deal with that if I get one.
So I'm assuming that an awful lot of people listening to this would have that level of non-knowledge, I don't want to call it ignorance at all, about a stoma. And so much of the book is just unbelievably helpful and detailed about what a stoma is and what living with a stoma is like. So where should we start with a stoma? Your description of what it actually is so important, because some of your body, your internal organs that we never really want to see, they are on the outside, aren't they?
Yeah, and I didn't know that was possible. I was like, how can someone be alive if a section of their intestine has come through their stomach wall and is now on the outside of their body? And again, all hail the NHS and medicine. Like, it's a medical marvel. And it's something that once it heals, it's just basically you go to the toilet out the front rather than the back. That's it, really.
Okay, tell us a bit more about the stoma, though, because it must be a very weird sensation, you know, waking up, coming round from such an enormous operation, and you know that you've got this thing that you have to learn how to take care of it. You have to learn that it's with you all the time. It is something outside your body. You chose to give it a name.
Yeah. Mine's called Audrey. When I first told the stoma nurses I was going to call her Audrey, they thought it was after Audrey Hepburn, but Audrey Wishes. It's actually after the very naughty monster plant out of Little Shop of Horrors. I don't know if you've seen that film or that musical, but it's that's kind of what Audrey looks like a Venus flytrap. She's very cheeky and very naughty.
How do you learn to live with a stoma?
Yeah, I understand when people find it difficult if they get one. You do go through a grieving process. You grieve for the body that you had before, definitely. But I think my grief was quite quick in those terms because, again, I didn't have much self-confidence. I didn't really like my body. And it wasn't until I went through the surgery for the cancer that I realised how incredible the body is. And this has been keeping me alive. It's been fighting cancer and it's been keeping me alive. And I got a massive sense of appreciation for myself.
Can you tell us a bit more about that? Because that's quite extraordinary.
Yeah, when I woke up, my first thought was, thank God I'm alive. And then secondly, it was to ring my girlfriend, Kate, and just check in with my family and just tell them all I'd made it, because I don't take anything for granted. So I knew that I might not wake up. And then I remembered that they'd told me that I might have a stoma. So I pulled back the covers and had a little look down, and I was like, oh, I've got a stoma. There's a little bag there. So I was like, wow. But at the time, because I just had surgery, I was really sore and I couldn't even sit up to look at it properly. So I just like took some sly pictures with my phone. So I had to wait until the day after to be fit enough to go over to the toilet and have a really good look in the mirror. And yeah, for some reason, it just looked beautiful to me. And I think it was just because, I don't know whether it was the medication from the operation, but I just saw myself and I thought, this is the girl that's going to come back from what she's been through.
Was there a little bit of you that also just wanted to embrace the challenge of it? Because there's so much that comes through in the book about how you just as a person are somebody who likes to rise to a challenge.
Yeah, I've learned that from my mum and dad. They've both had very tough lives. They've not had it easy. And I think I've seen them time and time again get back up every time they've been knocked over. And that's the way I choose to deal with things. And so you're right, in some way, I understand that difficult times can be very painful, but I understand that pain is where the growth happens. And I just wanted to let people who read this book know that when you're hurting, that's when you're winning.
Mm. But there's a huge gap, Adele, between wanting to rise to the challenge and deciding that you want to run the London Marathon with a stoma so soon, actually, after your operation. Why did you want to do that?
That is a great question. And the main reason was rejection, I think. I tried as much as I could not to let the cancer win. I know that there's a lot out of my control when it comes to cancer. Cancer could come back at any time. I know that I'm lucky every day that I'm cancer-free. But I just wanted to stick it to cancer. When I first found out, I was shocked. Then I was really upset. And then I got angry. I was like, no, you're not going to ruin my life. So I always had this thing in my head that I would try and at least do a little walk every single day to be my little rebellion to cancer. And so that walk turned into a little bit of a jog. And then it eventually turned into the marathon. But I think the main knockback that I got that you'll read about in the book is getting rejected from a TV programme. And the rejection came from having a medical, and the medical team said I wasn't fit enough to do it. And I felt like cancer had won in that moment, because I really wanted to be able to take part in the show to hopefully help other people with stomas to show what's possible. That hope was taken away from me, and I think that really hurt me.
Yeah. There is so much stigma around stoma, you know that, so much more than many other people. But do you sense that that is changing, and do you acknowledge how much somebody like you is a part of that change?
Thank you for your hope, so. From recently taking part in Dancing on Ice, the thing that kept me going every week was the messages and the letters that I get from people of all different ages, from kids to older people, just saying thank you. Thank you for showing people that there's nothing wrong with us and we can do things too.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because I think when you first get a stoma, and this happened to me, people don't mean to do it, but they almost tell you what you can't do. And I just didn't want that to be my experience. I wanted to know what was possible, because the stoma gave me my life back.
I don't want to give away too many of the stories in the book, Adele, because, we shouldn't do that. This is the game that we're playing, isn't it? But one of the ones that I wouldn't mind you just alluding to, because I think it is so helpful, is the story of Scott Mills, Audrey, and a bag of sugar. Could you tell us that?
Oh, you set that up really well. Scott Mills and the bag of sugar. So, yeah, this is... you'll find if you are ever the owner of a stoma that gut reaction is real. And if you get really excited or really nervous or you feel things deeply, your stoma reacts. Well, mine does anyway. And I was very anxious about Scott Mills leaving Radio 1. That also coincided with me getting to do my first ever show on Radio 2. It was the same day. I wanted to be at the party to say farewell to Scott Mills, who'd spent 28 glorious years at Radio 1. He's someone that I really look up to and I love deeply. I was also super excited at the thought of being on Radio 2. And that combination made my stomach go wild. And I don't know how much more I can say, but basically I nearly had to go to hospital if it wasn't for a bag of sugar.
So the bag of sugar is just a kind of trick that you can use to soak up when things go really badly wrong.
Yeah, really badly, yeah. And your stomach can turn into a monster.
We don't know what kind of cancer it is that the Princess of Wales, Catherine, is suffering from, and neither do we want to speculate about it at all. But as a young woman who has been dealt a massive blow and has had to tell everybody about her treatment, I wonder what your thoughts about her have been.
Yeah, I've been thinking about Catherine and William. Both of them have been incredible to me. They were kind enough to write to me when I first got ill.
Were they?
Yeah. I know this sounds like a complete lie, but I promise you it's true. When Prince William used to work on the air ambulance, he used to listen to Radio 1 and the show that I used to present, the Early Breakfast Show. And apparently, well, he told me he used to text in all the time, but with a different name. I think we thought he was Wayne the Trucker, but I'm not sure if that was actually him. But yeah, he used to text all the time, so he used to listen to my show. So when I got ill, he was kind enough to get in touch just to say good luck. And then he wrote again once I was cancer-free to say that him and Catherine were really happy that I was feeling better. And they just also know the importance of speaking about what you're going through if you can. And the fact that Catherine has been so, to me, courageous to share what she's been through. And like you say, respect her privacy and don't speculate. But to see somebody like Catherine lets people know it can affect anyone at any time. And so I think that she will be helping so many people around the UK not feel alone.
Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about your hopes for the future and your plans for the future and what you would like to happen?
Yeah, I just want to be able to get to 5 years cancer-free. That is my main goal now. I'm 2 years cancer-free. If I can make it to five, that will be my biggest achievement. That's all I'm focusing on. And in the meantime, I think spend more time with my family and just try and enjoy my life. I feel like I've got a second chance at life and I don't want to waste it.
Well, it's really lovely to see you, Adele. Thank you very much indeed. And I think the book's remarkable in its honesty and in its detail, actually. It answers so many of the questions that I think people are too afraid to ask of somebody who's been through what you've been through. So, you know, all hail to you for doing it. Adele Roberts talking about her journey through surgery for bowel cancer and treatment for it, and talking about Audrey, her stoma. I really agree with what you said before the interview, Jane, that I think Adele might not realise yet quite how impactful her story has been and is going to be, because being very visible about having a stoma. So the front cover of the book is her in running training gear, where you can clearly see Audrey poking out from the top of her running shorts. It's one of those bodily taboos that really hasn't been tackled, I don't think, by anybody as publicly before, and certainly for the younger generation, which Adele is.
Yeah, it used to be one of the things that people really did whisper about. Gynecological things were not much discussed, but if anything, this was in a category, all on its own. And if you did know somebody who had a bag, you would refer. Do you remember all the rumours about the late Queen Mother?
Yeah.
She was
about so many people.
Yeah, other celebrities. Yeah. And in fact, I don't think it was true in the case of the Queen Mother. But anyway, it was laughed at. That was ignorant, and it was shameful, actually, in retrospect. And I am incredibly impressed that a young woman like Adele is out there with it and just saying, you know, this has happened to me. And actually, if you look at the figures, it's increasingly common in younger
people.
Yeah,
it might happen to you.
And it might well happen to you. So learn about it and appreciate that you can live a good life and a brave and, running a marathon, please. I cannot imagine anything worse or harder. Some of my friends have done it and, you know, I don't...
No, I couldn't even walk the course, Jane.
I'm not sure I could. Yeah. I'm not sure I could. Well, I don't think I could.
So all hail to Adele. And if you want to buy her new book, it's called Personal Best, From Rock Bottom to the Top of the World.
Yeah, huge respect and admiration for Adele. And we wish her the very best, not just with the book, but with everything that she does in the future. We'd love to hear from you, particularly if you have gone and done it, married someone who's not British. No, I cannot think why. Anyway, I bloody can. Anyway, Jane and Fee at times.radio. If you've made a life with someone who's probably not familiar with Jam Roly Poly or Spotted Dick, just can't imagine what that might be like. Let us know. Good night. You did it. Elite listener status for you for getting through another half hour or so of our whimsical ramblings, otherwise known as the hugely successful podcast Off Air with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
We missed the modesty class. Our Times Radio producer is Rosie Cutler. The podcast executive producer, it's a man, it's Henry Tribe.
Yeah, he's an executive. Now, if you want even more, and let's face it, who wouldn't, then stick Times Radio on at 3 o'clock Monday until Thursday every week, and you can hear our take on the big news stories of the day, as well as a genuinely interesting mix of brilliant and entertaining guests on all sorts of subjects.
Thank you for bearing with us, and we hope you can join us again on Off Air very soon.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.